surgeon being silenced for telling the truth. That happened to orthopedic surgeon Dr. Gary Fetke in 2014. That's when the Australian Medical Board acted on an anonymous complaint from a dietitian who didn't believe he should be advising his diabetic patients about carb and sugar restrictions. Fortunately, Dr. Fetke won that case hands down in 2018. He even received a written apology. Let's hear his story and advice, how to live long and strong, not sick and fat. Welcome to the Wellness Whisperer podcast. I'm so delighted today to be sharing information about wellness, sugar, health, carbohydrates, weight gain, disease with Dr. Gary Fetke from Australia, who will share his story of pivoting because of some political ramifications of his beliefs in lifestyle medicine. Welcome, Gary.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. I'm from the future.
So congratulations on your success with the Australian government. You've been through quite a bit, you and your wife, Belinda. I find it astonishing that it even was a case. I just find it astonishing. A reputable doctor, orthopedic surgeon, well-trained, well-qualified, trying to make his patients healthier naturally and getting slapped on the wrist and going through all the legalities that you've had to go through for the past 4 years.
I don't think it was a slap on the wrist. It was, you know, sort of complete machine gunning down. Yeah. My clearing of that is actually a few years ago now, but it took nearly 5 years out of our life. I actually thought it was a joke. I thought this was absolutely ridiculous. You're really taking a crack at me, reporting me to the medical ward because I'm dangerous, because I'm advising patients to not have sugar when they've got out of control diabetes. And the clinch point for me when I sort of really took a stand is when I had a fellow in his 40s with severe diabetes and severe leg complications, and I was looking at amputating both of his legs. And he's in hospital and we're trying to get his blood glucose, blood sugar under control, and he was being given ice cream 3 times a day.
Oh, my goodness.
And I said, this is ridiculous. Can we stop that? And then I was told, oh, that's the guidelines. That's the hospital food guidelines. They're allowed to have that. Because at that time, diabetes, let them eat whatever they want and then just give them more and more medication. You know, and that's been the mantra for the last 20, 30 years, really, in diabetes. And guess what? It's totally out of control. But when you look at it and start looking at the hospital food guidelines and the national food guidelines and even the diabetes food guidelines, whether or not it's the American Diabetes Association, Australian Diabetes Australia, wherever around the world, it's absolutely abominable because it's actually advocating have as much sugar and carbohydrate as you want. And yet, to one backward step, diabetes is the inability of your body to control the carbohydrate load that you eat. If you eat sugar, you won't control it. If you eat carbohydrate, you won't control it. And that's a slightly altered. Everyone doesn't think of diabetes like that, but that's what it is. You can't control the blood glucose based on what you eat. And so what's interesting is there's no biochemical pathway in the body that actually requires you to eat glucose or fructose or carbohydrate. There's not a single biochemical pathway. It's worth repeating that you actually need to eat carbohydrate. The tiny amount of glucose you need in your bloodstream, even smaller amount of glucose can be generated by different pathways. So the answer to diabetes is really simple. If you're effectively allergic to carbohydrate, don't eat it. Essential proteins, essential fats, micronutrients, vitamins, minerals, you all need all that, and that's all available in food. But just don't eat the carbohydrate. And guess what? If you don't eat the carbohydrate, you reverse your diabetes within days.
Right. The profit shift in the world. They're not selling insulin. They're not selling the surgeries.
Selling Ozempic, you know, which is now the biggest, you know, taken the market by absolute storm. Novo Nordisk is now the highest valued company in Europe, based on Ozempic. Uh-huh. And Ozempic is just a disaster waiting to happen. It's actually going. It's incredibly expensive here in Australia. It's $25,000 per annum. You're on it forever. It's an injection every month. You know, it's a cash cow for the pharmaceutical industry. Mm-hmm. Very few people are talking about the side effects of it, which are nausea in the short term, muscle loss. in the medium term, and I suspect pancreatic failure in the medium term, because it's actually forcing the pancreas to do more work. And these people with obesity have already got pre-diabetes. I think it's going to flip them into a more severe diabetes. It's not the answer. Obesity diabetes is a lifestyle-related condition. It needs a lifestyle-related answer.
Everyone wants a pill or a potion or an injection or a quick answer, and there isn't one. It's diet and exercise.
Well, that is the quick answer. It's a lifestyle change. As I say, it's a lifestyle problem. A vast majority of conditions on the planet, and whether or not we're talking about cardiac disease or heart disease or lung problems or autoimmune, mental health, diabetes, obesity, all of them have a major structural component related to nutrition. That's it. Until we address that, until you put the right fuel in your car, it's no use putting it in for servicing. And those people who get it. And the vast majority of the system is broken because it needs, you know, the cash flow is a sickness industry. It's not, and people, you know, I'm just gobsmacked how many people don't want to travel that path because it's inconvenient.
They don't want to give up their goodies.
I'm talking more at healthcare professionals. Because, you know, if you're actually going to encourage people to make a lifestyle change, I mean really encourage them, which involves time, it's not remunerated very well. So it's far more efficient to actually give people a tablet, continue down the path. And here's one of the things, you know, I've, for the last 10 years, trying to work out why doctors don't want to do this. Healthcare professionals, nurses aren't advising more about lifestyle. Because we have a major problem saying sorry. So if I'm right, you know, if we're right talking about diet and lifestyle, and particularly about low carb or keto or eating more animal-based product over plant-based, then that means that the advice we've been giving to our patients and to our children and our families means it's wrong. And you ask doctors to admit that they're wrong. You know, that's, it's like, water on a stone, it just doesn't mix. But as a parent, that's the very first thing you teach children. You know, oh, you've made a mistake, admit that you're wrong, learn by it, and we'll all move on. And all I've seen is the system double down upon this medicate, operate, take the pill, the easy path of writing prescriptions for decades. And I think it's a sad indictment on the system, but I'm stating it. And you can see why I get into trouble, because I make people feel uncomfortable. But that's it. Because guess what? The biggest, the most freeing time for me was to say I got it wrong. So, you know, I said I'm sorry. I've apologized to the system. I've apologized to my patients, I've apologized to our children. I'm sorry, guys, we fed you the wrong food when you were growing up.
It's okay to call BS when there's BS, and you did that, but a lot of people don't have the stomach for it. So thank you for speaking up. Changing your diet makes such a huge difference. I just got back from vacation, and I can't wait to go back to my paleo diet and get to feeling better, because I feel like crap right now. I'm bloated. I can't fit into my pants, and I fell off the bandwagon and went to the bakeries and had some beers. But I can rectify that.
Well, that's the thing. People say, oh, you're hardcore about this. I'm saying, no, look, 90% of people did 90% of what we're talking about. We're going to get rid of 90% of the problems on the planet related to health. Mm-hmm. Oh, that's a big call. And I said, well, no, it's not. You know, it's literally, you know, we quickly talked about statistics. Last statistics out of the US were 93.2% of the population are metabolically unwell. So, and the health system's broken. It doesn't matter if it's in the US or Australia. I talked to the politicians about, like, and let's go to a dam. We've got a dam, and there's an enormous amount of water coming behind the dam. And literally, the dam's overflowing. That's why the system can't cope. because 93.2% of the population are, you know, metabolically unwell. But if we go back 3-4 years, it was just under 90%, and the system was coping a bit better. So to get the system to go from not coping to coping, we don't need to get the 93% down to 3%, it'd be nice. We get it down to 85%, and all of a sudden, the system will cope. You know, yeah. I'm simplifying it, but you know, to actually see a change at the coalface, at the hospitals where, you know, there's bed weights and restrictions and whatever, let's just improve the metabolic health of 5% of society. The system will probably sneak back into coping a bit better.
And take a look at what's being offered on the hospital menu and get the ice cream and the cookies off. Maybe make some small adjustments there.
Well, we've had some huge wins here in Australia in the last 6 months, which are going to extrapolate out into the rest of the world, because we can, I keep coming back to diabetes. It's a low hanging fruit, and the low hanging fruit is if you can actually improve the quality of the food for people with diabetes, they'll get immediate blood glucose control and so on, and you can show that. So the concepts of the option of remission and reversal of your diabetes is now part of our national diabetes guideline, number one. Number two, the Australian Diabetes Society has adopted therapeutic carbohydrate restriction as the method, one of the methods of doing it. The other two are still drugs and bariatric surgery, but nonetheless, we've got that into the system. So, and Diabetes Australia, just in the last month or two, has adopted this policy. So the result of that is it has to now come into the hospital food. So dietary guidelines, which are written by government, determine what food's served in hospitals, nursing homes, defence forces, schools, and what was the other group? Anyway, so essentially it's our education. So if you can actually change that with diabetes, so the flow on from that is now the doctors in Australia are now asking for these courses in low-carb management, therapeutic carbohydrate restriction. The Dietitians Association here in Australia is asking for those courses, because now it's embarrassing if the dietitians of Australia and the world don't know about it, and the dietitians around the world who are talking about therapeutic carbohydrate restriction, low-carb keto, the ones that have been doing it for the last 10 years have been pretty well trying to fly underneath the radar and underneath the regulators. But now they can come out. They can literally come out and start talking about it. And we had dinner the other night with our diabetes educator who used to work with us. And I constantly tell the story of Diane, because she is the only diabetes educator I know that was ever skipping down the corridor with joy for the results she was getting. So literally that was just, she still smiles. She says, I know that you skip. So when women in their 50s are skipping down the corridor professionally, you're on a winner.
Yeah, absolutely.
Ask how many dietitians skip down the corridor with the results they get. With some amount of glare in the background, I'm just going to twist around a bit. Sorry.
Are you in good standing now with the Dietitians Association or the nutritional associations in your country, or how does that stand?
I think I think is a simple answer. I'm still persona non grata. I'll never get an apology from them, but I have got an apology because I've been helping write and start all of those courses. Mm-hmm. I've had a sort of a mentoring role in all of those courses, and whether or not it's not a win lose. It's not. I'll never get an apology from the groups that decided to take me down. But I know in my heart, my family knows, and those people around us know that, you know.
And hundreds of thousands of people that appreciate what you did know. Let's talk about it. You have a following, I think, of 100,000 on Twitter, and a website called isupportgary.com for everyone that stood by you during this 5 years of challenge.
That was Belinda's website where she explored not just supporting me, but Belinda's the world leader in understanding the vested interests that are blocking the message. So she, if and whoever's speaking out again, if what I'm talking about is biochemistry and it's simple science and it's the basics, and if you're blocking that message, we like to know why you're blocking it. It might be because you've got a philosophical opinion. You might have a paid opinion. You might have an educational opinion. And Belinda is the world expert on nutting out those people. And when you actually find, and you know, it's good health, good food, not surprisingly, there's not a lot of profit margin in there for food industry, pharmaceutical industry. And her work is uncovered, and I know in a confrontation again to people, is the central role of the Seventh-day Adventist Church in actually promoting our food guidelines. So when you recognize, and again, Belinda used to be a Sunday school teacher. She's a good person. She's much nicer than me. But her work, she just said, like, you know, you got myself, other colleagues around the world, and we've talked about, you know, Sean Baker, Ken Berry in the US, and Tim Noakes in South Africa, Annika Dahlquist in Sweden. We're getting hammered by our regulators about talking about good food and preventative health. So she said, actually, why is, you know, this has got nothing to do with science. She said, I'm going to work it out. So as it turned out, the expert witness used against me was working for a company called Sanitarium, which is a breakfast cereal industry company here in Australia. And you know, we tracked all that documentation down so that I was in fact being targeted by the breakfast cereal industry. And that included Kellogg's, Sanitarium, Nestle, Freedom Foods, Food and Grocery Council here in Australia. And when you go back in history, our dietary guidelines started in October 23, 1917 in the US with the formation of the American Dietetics Association. And at that meeting, the woman who essentially got that started was Lena Cooper, who has been working with John Harvey Kellogg and co. And the role of veganism and to avoid plant-based and to avoid animal-based foods is there in those original guidelines in the 1920s. And you go to their textbooks. So you effectively had this breakfast cereal industry with a Seventh-day Adventist vegan agenda, which has started the dietary guidelines and wrote the textbooks for the next 40 years for the American Dietetics Association. Lena Cooper was the person who started it for the Defence Forces, first dietitian appointed to the US Defence. Those textbooks became the textbooks for the world. And so our dietary guidelines, when you look at them over the last 100 years, have gradually shown more and more, less and less animal-based foods. And think about the food pyramid. You know, it's more, you know, it's grain and vegetable-based at the bottom. And you even look at the MyPlate, which you have in the US, the word protein doesn't even have meat on it anymore. It's just literally protein. And this thought that you can get it all from plant protein, pea protein, which is you simply can't get all your proteins from that. Certainly can't get the healthy fats from that. So, but again, when you realize that the Seventh-day Adventist Church started virtually the entire cereal industry of the world, they're the second biggest educator after the Catholic Church. They've been writing the dietary guidelines for the world. They effectively started the Western soy industry, the infant feed formula industry, and the stevia industry, and they're vertically integrated. An incredibly powerful organization, well involved in the World Health Organization. And we've actually, you know, Belinda's work's uncovered where they sit at a senator, you know, at your Congress level, and who's been, you know, and I think it's three out of the last five presidential doctors have been Seventh-day Adventists promoting a vegan, vegetarian agenda, plant-based. And it's but that's why we totally screwed over, because you don't want to go against the guidelines. Because if you get, like, that's what I did. I got into trouble because I wasn't promoting the food guidelines. So therefore, either I'm wrong or the guidelines are wrong. And if the guidelines are wrong, you guess what? You wouldn't be surprised. The guidelines are written by the food industry, pharmaceutical industry, goes on and on. at that very first meeting in 1917, with 4 weeks' notice, when they decided to form the American Dietetics Association, six food processing companies came along and sponsored it. So your the world's dietary guidelines have been compromised by the food industry within 4 weeks of them even thinking about forming the association. And they formed the association, and they were there, you know, with whatever 1917 advertising placard they had to support the system.
I appreciate the work that your wife has done in backtracking, because the average consumer, we're trying to be smart, we're trying to do our research, we're reading our AARP books and what we should be eating to live a higher longevity life and quality. But it is political, and you do have the bigger hands in the pie that are influencing decisions that aren't helping us. So thank you.
So that's generational education, because you believe your parents, you believe your teachers, you believe their teachers. And so you've actually got to keep backtracking in history. When did this nonsense start? And it's there. It's in black and white. You can actually find it. There it is, October 23, 1917. Boom, there's the date. But again, those Kellogg's beliefs actually came back to temperance movement beliefs in the mid-1800s. So again, but it's all in history when you go looking for it with your eyes open. Because if you read the textbooks now, it doesn't tell you all of that stuff.
Right. So the word of wisdom here on the Wellness Whisperer is be very cautious of who you're getting your information from and who is influencing that person and the person that's influencing that person, because it's big pharma, big food, big government, and only you and your personal physician can know what's best for you. And hopefully you're working with a personal physician that is holistic and informed and there to help you truly, not just to book a surgery or sell an Ozempic subscription or prescription. So it's incredible. So would you explain, it happened to you, it happened here in the United States to Dr. Sean Baker, who's also an orthopedic surgeon, and you advised him and got him over the hump and his license back, correct?
Well, I think Sean got himself over the hump. I acted as a mentoring role. And because essentially when you're getting caught up in the system, you feel guilty until you realize, hang on. And again, well, I know Sean really well. You know, the great thing about orthopedic surgeons is that they're arrogant. And so therefore, if you're arrogant and you know you're right, you dig your heels in. And so therefore, but it's so important to know. So the same game plan was used in three other countries. And so I was helping a surgeon just yesterday, you know, just giving her some counsel. And I said, okay, now let's just find out what the motive was. Because, you haven't done anything wrong. You're helping your patients. So what's the motive? And so when you realize that that's what you're up against, and that's all the discussions, you know, Sean and I had amongst a few other things, but, you know, this is find out what the game plan is, find out why they're trying to get rid of you. And Sean's problem was that he was becoming too efficient. He wasn't doing enough surgery because you've got a different incentivization program in the US than the hospitals. You've got to get through your throughput and your operations. We're structurally different here in Australia. But effectively, Sean was doing less operating, because his patients were getting better without him operating.
Right. They were losing weight. Their knees no longer hurt and buckled. They didn't need the surgery, and he didn't do the surgery, and that didn't make administrators happy.
Well, osteoarthritis of the knee is a really interesting one. You can, I saw eight patients in a week which lost their pain to the point they didn't need surgery with bare bone arthritis in the knee, and they hadn't lost weight. So I know it's true because I put it on Twitter. Twitter at the time. But what I'm saying, when you go into the biochemistry, and there's a talk of mine called Carbohydrate, the Dose is the Poison. That was my COVID talk that I thought I'd do some research on. And when you find it, that carbohydrate produces insulin by the body, and insulin provokes the inflammation in the knee. So these people, by literally just stopping their sugar and carbohydrate intake or dramatically reducing it, lost their arthritic pain. Their x-rays didn't get better, and they lost their pain before they lost weight.
The inflammation is so much. They were pain-free. That's great.
But what I'm saying, it's not just, you know, because the system says, oh, they've got to lose weight to lose their pain. No, you lose the inflammation. The bonus is that down the track, you'll continue to lose weight or stabilize your weight. Not everyone needs to lose weight. I talk about stabilizing weight.
One of your talks, some of the most metabolically ill people are skinny people. You know, if you look inside my body right now, I wouldn't look very pretty because of the inflammation I gained this past couple of weeks. But yeah, you can't look on the outside.
How long is it going to take for your inflammation to go?
I'll be back in 5 days.
First of all, if people do adopt a change towards a healthier eating, how do we measure it? I say to people, actually, just how do you feel? You know, you can look at your waist circumference and you can measure your clothes and whatever, and there are all sorts of blood tests, but more importantly, how do you feel? But here's a really enjoyable one, is that how long will you keep improving for? And it's about 4 years. And that's based on the biochemistry again. The seed oils, the inflammatory vegetable oil seed oils, probably have a half-life of about 4 years. The linoleic acid, the omega-6 one, probably. And it's not really certain, but it's going to take a long time to get out of the system. And so if you start listening to people very carefully, you'll find out they'll keep saying they'll keep improving for 4 years. So if you've had some seed oil or you've had some deep fried food or they've cooked it in healthy cottonseed oil or canola oil or whatever, that'll take 4 years to drive out of the system.
Even with sauna and even with sweating.
Yeah.
That's discouraging, but thank you.
Well, no, it's not discouraging because, guess what? That is the long haul answer. And so, if I'd like to, first of all, our first goal was, if you've got diabetes, there's a way of going into remission. If I've got a final goal in life, it would be to see that if you decide to eat junk food, if you decide to eat badly, that you're making a conscious decision against your health outcome. So if people smoke nowadays, I'm okay with it because there's enough information out there that if you smoke anything probably, but tobacco, you're making a conscious decision to be an idiot. So I go, okay, you've made that decision. So the same thing goes with processed food. Now, I'd like people to take that decision that if you're going to do that, this is going to have a negative outcome on your body. Mm-hmm. And it's going to take some time. And we had our youngest daughter, who's now 28, I can still remember when she was about 15 or 16, tall, leggy, blonde. And you can say that, a father can say that about his daughter. But anyway, we're at the airport and she said, oh, Dad, can I have some McDonald's chips? Because she's just hungry, a teenage. And my eyes were starting to roll back and she said, I know how you feel about vegetable oils, Dad. And then she said, I promise not to get pregnant for 4 years. So.
Oh, she knows how to work
there. She made an informed decision to eat badly, knowing the health consequences to an unborn child, didn't have. And you tell me which father is not going to put his hand in his pocket for a couple of coins to prevent his teenage daughter from not getting pregnant for the next 4 years. I mean, but she made an informed decision. And she's not a perfect eater now, but she's made informed decisions about it. And so that's where I'd like us all to head towards. And in the US, in Australia, we're privileged enough to actually have access to good food if we want. Not everyone.
And so therefore, way. Yeah, it used to be very limited. Now we have lots of great choices.
If you're privileged enough to have that access, then it's an abuse not to do it.
Exactly.
And that's at a society level. Because the vast majority of people on the planet don't have access to A, this information, B, have access to that food because of their situation, economics or food availability. But most people listening to this podcast are going to have that.
they're tuned in and the information's out there. I mean, your YouTube channel is rich. I've been watching it for the past week, very rich with information of our evolution and our decline and hopefully our re-evolution. Is there anything that you would like to share where your future is? Are you going to be doing more talking now or on the speakers tour?
Our role is very much mentoring. The great thing now is that you know, myself and others, you know, ourselves and others have broken the back of this, and we've now got some philanthropic funding coming our way, which is what's great is that they came to me and I said, look, I don't want it, but these groups do. And so, as I've said to them, we've got a wedge into the system now. We just need a hammer. And like everyone, you know, we've been up against literally multi-billion-dollar industries who have wanted, and we're not being paranoid about it. This is just a simple fact. And we've actually got the minutes from their meetings saying the concepts of, you know, low-carb, keto, paleo are affecting their bottom line, affecting profits, and these people are to be targeted. Now, part of me is very proud to be on that list of eight people, and the other part of me is terrified. So the system's broken. You know, here in Australia, you can buy low-carb beer. You know, so, you know, you can buy, I'm not saying go and drink beer, but I'm sort of saying the public are aware of this. Mm-hmm. And so now our role is to have, you know, chats like this with you so that you can go put out that message to a whole lot of other people. As I say, I'm still mentoring a lot of people in this space. And that actually chews up a fair amount of our time. And we're grandparents now. So, you know.
Congrats. Well, we will wrap this up. And I'll say, if you want to learn more about Dr. Fetke's work, you can go to isupportgary.com. He is on Twitter. His handle is Fruit Coast No is your handle on Twitter or X.
Yes. Yes.
And you also have a website. Tell me if this is still current. nofructokes.com.
It's current, but it's absolutely out. It needs a whole lot of work and update. But because that's because we've been caught up doing everything else.
Yeah.
We'd like it all summarized in one sentence. So I've been, again, arrogant. I've written the dietary guidelines for the world in one sentence. And if everyone just took that, that's my message now. You know, my message so it used to be, you know, sugar makes you hungry, carbs make you fat, polyunsaturated oils make you sick and inflamed. You know, that's one mantra. And I'm very, you know, I think I'm the first person in the world to describe that 10 years ago. You know, that combination, which is now mainstream, but I can tell you at that time it was quite new. But here's the take-home message. Now, eat fresh, local, seasonal, whole food based on your culture and environment, avoiding added sugar and processed food. There it is.
Love it. That's a mantra. That put it on the side of every bus in America and UK.
And what I have described there is low-carb, ketogenic diet, lifestyle. Because when you take it apart line by line, or word by word, it is. Eat fresh, local, seasonal, whole food, based on your culture and environment, avoiding added sugar and processed food. You know, that takes a food mileage out of the equation. It means getting back to your local farmers and supporting your local community.
And I love the seasonal aspect of it. Just getting back in sync, our circadian rhythm of life, instead of living out of a box or a sack. And walk to the grocery store. Don't drive if you can. So thank you, Gary.
It was an absolute pleasure. And I'm glad we got our time zones working.
I am so glad. Thank you so much. And congratulations on being a grandfather and all the work you and Belinda are doing. Please keep doing it. You have a cheerleader over here in the United States. And I will pimp this out to the world. Thank you.
Thank you very much. All the best. Okay. Bye-bye.
Thanks. Bye.